Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset, and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests in all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is Michael Unbroken on healing from trauma, how to stop seeking external validation, and developing self-love the right way. This was such a powerful conversation. I was definitely outside of my comfort zone for this one. I've talked with topics on this podcast that I've never previously discussed when it comes to some of my own issues with trauma, some of my own experiences. And it's one of these conversations that's probably going to go one or two ways for you. If it's triggering, you may not want to listen all the way through because you'll have to break it into sections. If it is a conversation you need to hear, it's going to change your life. It's one of those. Michael's content is like that. His podcast is like that. It can, if you're in the place to accept the message that's there, it can potentially open up doors that will remain closed to you forever if you didn't ask the right questions. And we jump around from a lot of different topics today about the power of words, what to do if you've got toxic parents, does trauma ever go away, how to work through external validation, amongst other things. But this is such an incredible conversation. I'm so grateful we got to have it. The one thing I will say here is there's quite a lot of swearing in this podcast because Michael, very similar to me, by default swears in his speaking. So if you're listening to this episode with kids around or in your car, etc., just be mindful of that as well. I'll put up the explicit warning anyway as normal. But without further ado, here's a super powerful conversation, one I'm so grateful that I got to have with Michael Unbroken on healing from trauma, how to stop seeking external validation and developing self-love the right way. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Michael Unbroken. Michael is a best-selling author, speaker, and coach who helps trauma survivors get out of the vortex to become the hero of their own story. Normally, at this point, I would do a quick introduction to your backstory, Michael, but there is no way I could do it justice. So I'm going to switch it up a little bit today and let you tell it. Michael, tell everybody listening a little bit about your backstory growing up.
Yeah, Brian, and thanks for having me, brother. It's super exciting to be here today. So, you know, I'll give the elevator pitch version of this, right? So when I was 4 years old, my mother, who was a drug addict and alcoholic, she actually cut off my right index finger. And so that kind of gives you baseline. That's the starting point, right? And people always go, well, how could your mother do that? And the thing that I now understand is that's just the continuation of generational trauma, right? Her parents were super abusive and so on. When I was 6, she married my stepfather, super abusive guy, would beat the shit out of my brothers and I, put me in the hospital. And I spent the majority of my childhood homeless and in poverty. And in fact, I lived with 30 different families as a kid, getting bounced around place to place. And I got high for the first time when I was 12, drunk when I was 13. And then at 15, I got expelled from school for selling drugs. And I was out selling drugs. I was breaking into houses. I was stealing cars. I was hurting people, running with guns. And, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen with my life. Luckily, I got put into a last chance program and I still didn't graduate high school on time. Basically, they just handed me the diploma and they're like, dude, you just got to get the hell out of here. And so I was trying to figure out the solution for poverty, for homelessness, for abuse, for all of those things. And ultimately, what it came down to was, it's got to be money, right? And I said to myself, well, here's the plan. I want to make $100,000 a year by the time that I'm 21. And I want to do it legally. And the legal part is very important because my three childhood best friends as of today, they've been murdered. And it was over drugs and it was all these things. And I was like, this can't be my life. And so I just started figuring out how to legally grow in corporate America. And as I was heading into my 21st birthday, I landed a job with a Fortune 10 company, no high school diploma, no college education. And then that thing happens when people get money who have never had money. It basically destroyed my life. And I found myself by the time I was 25, heading into 26, I was 350 pounds, smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day, drinking myself to sleep. And that's when I put a gun in my mouth. Dude, I was just done. I was like, man, I thought money was supposed to solve these problems. I thought this was going to be the thing that changed my life, and it didn't. And the next day, I'm laying in bed. Now, dude, you'll appreciate this. Keep in mind, I'm 350 pounds. I'm smoking a joint, eating chocolate cake, and watching the CrossFit Games. Now, man, if that's not rock bottom, like, I don't know what is. And I went in the bathroom and I looked in the mirror and I asked myself, what are you willing to do to have the life that you want to have? And from that, I said to myself, no excuses, just results. And fast forward almost 12 years later, Brian, here I am talking to you today, my friend.
Oh, man, there's so much to unpack there. And when I was doing a deep dive, I've been following your stuff for a while now, and your podcast in particular, again, it's my favorite means of consuming content. There's some incredible stuff there, and I'm going to unpack that as we go along through the podcast, because there's a lot of triggers for me, good in a good way. You know, the best books, the best podcasts will have those moments where you're like, oh, I need to check in with that. But from the what are you willing to do, you know, asking yourself that question, talk about the power of words.
Yeah. You know, I think that's everything. You know, I think about this all the time. What you think becomes what you speak become your action, and your action become your reality. And, you know, for many people who come from traumatic backgrounds, and I think most people in general, we get inundated with these concepts and ideas about who we should be from other people. Right? Our family, our friends, our peers, our teachers, people tell you you're not good enough, you're not strong enough, you're not capable enough, right? Whatever that thing is. And then you start telling yourself that same story. And then what happens is the more that you tell yourself that story, the more that you act that way, right? You do things to sabotage your life. You do things to ruin your relationships. You do things to ruin your finances, your physical health, your mental health. Now, of course, there's a part of it that's uncontrollable. Like, I think we can all agree with that. But a lot of the choices we make in life really start with the way we're talking to ourselves. And so if you kind of switch frame, if you switch gears, and you think about this, what if you were the kind of person that were kind to themselves? What if that was your baseline? What if that was your starting point for the way that you acted in your life? You would act as a kind person would act to themselves, meaning you would do hard things. You would ask hard questions. You would challenge yourself. You would challenge the narrative. You would get uncomfortable because, you know, on the backside of discomfort is growth. And so in that, if you operate through this idea that I am the kind of person who is kind to myself, on a long enough timeline, your life will be very, very different. But it's, think about this, man. Right now, you're talking to yourself in a way that if you talk to me would get you punched in the face or arrested, and you think you're going to be successful, right? And that's what people get caught up on. They're like, I want to be successful. I want to have this great life. And every single time they make a mistake, they call themselves stupid, call themselves dumb, worthless, not good enough. Well, guess what? If you start to move through this scope of being kind to yourself first, your life will radically change. And I think you have to understand there is a differentiation between being kind to yourself and doing what you need to do and taking it easy on yourself. And that's where people get caught up.
How would you explain the difference to people? I think that's a really important point that you've made, Michael.
Yeah, I think so much of that lies in these places and these moments and times of decision, right? Life is all about the decisions that we make. And on a long enough timeline, every single decision you make has an outcome, right? At the end of the day, every choice that you make every single day from the moment you wake up till the moment you go to bed, every single thing that you have done has a consequence, whether good or bad, right? And we feel inside of us often this need to satiate our desire to withhold pain, to withhold being in difficult situations, to withhold discomfort. And the more that we withhold those things, the harder it becomes. Because think about this, man. Have you ever in your life solved a problem that you did not address? No, you can't. Why? Because that's not how the world works. That's not how life works. And the space between taking it easy on yourself and taking care of yourself is very simple. Because it's in that space where you're like, is this thing that I'm going to do, even though it's difficult, hard, uncomfortable, not what I want to do, right? Breaking up, leaving the job, starting the business, going to the gym for the first time, eating healthy, like whatever that thing is, like that is often that part about taking it easy on yourself, because that's the hard thing. And it's a lot easier to stay in your comfort zone. But when you're operating through this scope of kindness for being who you are, you're not going to take it easy on yourself. You're going to ask yourself, am I taking care of myself? And in that scope of taking care of yourself, you're going to go and do those difficult things. Taking it easy on yourself is easy, right? It's easy. You don't have to do shit. All you have to do is sit on the couch. You chill. You don't change anything about your life. And change only happens when you make change happen. There's no Disney moment. There's no miracles. And nobody's coming to rescue you.
Yeah, be the hero of your own story. Again, something that I connect with so much. And it's one of the standout takeaways for me when you mentioned withholding pain, withholding discomfort. It kind of gives me a nice little segue into releasing trauma from the body, because one of the things I've had to change my mind about in recent years, Michael, is I always had either that tough love approach, either some of the language you used, you know, you fucking loser, you can't do it, you know, all of that was my internal self-talk for so long. That's why I'm so I think it's so important to highlight the influence of words and the way you speak to yourself. But I went the other way, as most of us do. I think anyone with an extreme personality can go the other way, where I was pure, don't be a victim, you know, get up, 5 a.m. club, do your fucking 10-mile run, get your workout in, you know, and grind. And you're never being compassionate with yourself. You're never being kind with yourself. And I'm trying to bring it back towards the middle now. But it gives me a nice little segue, because withholding pain, discomfort, for me, dealing with trauma, and I know we'll unpack it on here and on your podcast as well when I'm on yours, because we're doing, for people listening, we'll talk about that later, that we're doing two sides. So I'll link over your podcast at the end, Michael, for people to subscribe to. I highly recommend they check it out. But for me, my releasing of trauma was through running, through exercise. That when I found I was able to put myself into a 10-mile run, 15-mile run, 20-mile run, a lot of stuff was coming up for me. Childhood trauma, some of the issues that I avoided for long periods of my life. And running was nearly my vehicle towards getting some of those thoughts to consciousness that I could potentially deal with them and work through the trauma. Talk to us about how to release trauma from your body.
Yeah, that's amazing that you had that experience. And you know what I often think about is that comes from the space of having time to think, right? You're by yourself, you're on the long run. Eventually, you know, the batteries in your earbuds die. You're out there by yourself, man. And that's been the greatest space of healing for me personally, is in the moments of solitude, of silence, of quiet, because we have a lot to process. We have a lot to get through. And I think physical movement often, for many people, and myself included in this, can become this beautiful precursor for creating a massive transformation in your life. If you go and look at a lot of the research, whether it's from Pete Walker or Bessel van der Kolk or the Gottliebs, whomever it is, the thing that you often see is like there is a correlation between, you know, your traumatic experiences as a child and even as an adult, and it getting stored within the body. You know, people think mental health is only mental, but it's not. It's physical. It shows up in weird pains and aches and sickness and illness, right? There's a lot of research that points that, you know, statistically on average, and I can only speak to American statistics, unfortunately, I don't know world statistics, but in the Western states, there are on average 83% of children have an adverse childhood experience. And depending on how many of those experiences that you have, now you could have up to a 5,200% likely chance of committing suicide, 2,200% more likely chance of using alcohol, 2,000% more likely chance of using tobacco, right? Because think about this, man. Why do we go to the things that take away joy from us? Because we're numbing ourselves. You know, it's an autonomic response, really, to move from the stressors, to move away from the pain. And so when you're in this place, you're like, okay, I want to get my life together. I want to go on this healing journey. I want to figure out what I need to do. You know, it could be a myriad of things that ultimately lead you to this place where you start to see change happen in your life. And so I'll just share mine I don't know if it's necessarily anecdotal, because I've had this experience with and conversation with many, many people who stepped into this in a similar pace. And once I started doing yoga, like that became this amazing space of transformation for me, for a few reasons. One, because I was moving my physical body. Again, keep in mind, I was 350 pounds when I started getting serious about healing. And I had played sports as a kid, but, you know, I'd gotten away from any physical movement. I was sitting in an office. I was eating crap on my lunch. I was drinking every night, partying every weekend. And I just, you know, to say you let yourself go, like, that's not real. I just wasn't taking care of myself. And so, you know, first step was I started doing yoga. And this was like over a decade ago when dudes did not do yoga, right? And so I started doing it very simply with DVDs. And then those DVDs turned into, okay, I'm going to have the courage to walk inside a yoga studio. And Brian, dude, no bullshit. The first time I walked in the yoga studio, it was just nothing but like smoking hot 6 foot tall women with abs. I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me right now? This is happening. And I was like, go anyway, walk into that room, face the fear of being in discomfort. And then yoga has been a part of my life since. And I watched the body transformation. And as a body transformation happened, it like started getting into, let me see if I can build muscle. Let me see if I can move my body in ways I never have. Let me do CrossFit. Let me train for an Ironman. Let me go and do Muay Thai and MMA training and jiu-jitsu and really learn how to be inside of my body. One of the things that people don't understand about traumatic experiences is the huge disconnect between your brain and your body. It's called dissociation. And in dissociation, you're in this position where what happens is you start acting and you're just like, wait, how did I get in this position? Why am I in this way? Like I'm so removed from my body and my brain. It's like they're on two separate planes. And physical activity actually brings those back together. And so that's why, you know, walking meditation is so important and yoga. But then there's also the other side of it, man, where there's body work, like deep tissue massage and acupuncture and myofascial release and physical therapy. You know, one of the things that many, many trauma survivors do not do is take care of their physical body when they're in pain. And so if you want to really step into healing, you have to go to the doctor when you're sick. You have to go get physical therapy when you're injured. I mean, I remember one time, dude, I had 4 broken fingers at one time in high school because I wrestled when I actually went to school, I should say. And I wrestled the whole season with broken fingers. Like that is not taking care of yourself, right? And so as an adult, if you're sick, if you're injured, if you don't feel well, you have to take care of yourself. That is such a profound part of healing the body through trauma. I mean, I know I just layered out a lot of different things, but they all kind of intersect.
Yeah, they do. And one of the unknowns I had for sure, Michael, when I think it was even before I read Bessa van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score, which was a book that took me probably 6 or 7 months to read because it kept triggering me. There was chapters in there and sections in there that I'm like, one of my best friends, Orla, calls it a freezer book, a book that you want to just throw in the freezer because it's too triggering. You know, and I think that was one of mine that kind of got me on the journey of that self-discovery. But I also didn't realize, and I know your book unpacks this a lot, you know, Think Unbroken, about how trauma is stored in the body. And I didn't make that connection. As a teenager, I used to get really bad headaches. You know, I was a suicidal teenager. Like, we'll come back to parents later in the podcast, because that's literally the only reason I didn't commit suicide as a teenager, was because I thought about what would my mum do. And I didn't realize that trauma stored in the body and showed up in different ways, showed up in headaches, showed up in gut issues, showed up in, you know, all these different forms that I was just unfamiliar with. Talk about how trauma is stored in the body.
Yeah, you know, it's exactly like what you just said, man. I used to get these terrible migraines as a kid, like crippling. I'd be on the ground, like eyes closed, dead silent, and it felt like someone was drilling a hole into my brain, right? Then there's also the parts of it where you may have asthma. Right. That's super, super common in trauma survivors. Why don't I do this instead? Right. Because you can pinpoint a lot of the ailments that people have to growing up in a cortisol state and being in fight or flight for most of their adolescence to long term detrimental health ramifications. But what I think would be really interesting here for people to understand is kind of the research behind it. So what happens is when you look at the way that the human body is, you understand that it's really broken down into 2 major systems of the central nervous system, right? You have the sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight, flight, freeze, fawn response. That's your adrenal system. That's where, you know, if you get scared, a lot of people, they might pee their pants. You hear about this all the time. And the reason why is because all of your your non-important system functions, they lose blood flow. Your bladder, your colon, your digestive system. Why? Because that blood actually gets rerouted into your extremities, your eyes, your arms, your legs. Here's the reason why. Because think about this, Brian. What do you need to do if you see a bear in front of you, right? You've got to be able to move into that place of survival. And if you're in the you're walking down the road and you see a stick on the ground, your brain has to be able to go, is that a stick or is that a snake? And if it's a snake, what happens is immediately, and this is microseconds, your brain gets flooded with from the amygdala, and suddenly you're in this place where adrenaline is pumping through your body, right? And because of that, now the only thing that's happening is you're focused on one thing. And what is that thing? Survival. Okay, now the other side of the coin is the parasympathetic nervous system. I always remind myself of this as parasympathetic means parachute, right? And what is a parachute for? It helps you not crash to the ground and die, right? And so in the parasympathetic nervous system, that is the opposite of the sympathetic, that fight or flight. The parasympathetic is very much about rest, digest, recover. That's the optimal state. Like, that's your nominal state. That's where you want to be. Now, the problem is, think about this. If you're in a position where you cannot rest and recover, then you're always going to be in a position of fight or flight, which means that now that cortisol level growing up in that state in your most formative years becomes the baseline for how your body interacts with the world. So you are always like what we call hypervigilant, meaning you're always aware, you're always tense, your jaw's always clenched, your shoulders are up, you're always like feeling like you're gonna explode. Now, that becomes autonomic because it's a survival mechanism. Think about this. 10,000 years ago, you really, really needed that system. Why? Because if you were a hunter-gatherer, which you were 10,000 years ago, and you were out in the woods, you had to be prepared for not only capturing food, right, but you might be something's food. A fucking lion might eat you. Well, fast forward to, you know, 1930s, 50s, 90s, 2000s, and beyond where we are right now, that system doesn't serve you as well. But here's the problem. When that system is activated in your home, right, the place where you're growing up, your school, your community, then that system just stays on. Because think about this, the place that it's supposed to turn off and you go in the parasympathetic nervous system, rest and digest, that should be at your home. That should be at peace. You should be able to sleep and recover and all of those things. But how do you recover when there's a lion in your house, right? And so what happens is your body is always flooded with cortisol. You're always in this place where your amygdala is misfiring, your hippocampus is misfiring, your prefrontal cortex is all about survival. Then you're very much in this position where the only thing happening in your life every single day is you're flooded, you're triggered, you're trying to survive, you're freaking out, and your body never gets the opportunity to relax. And so on a long enough timeline, when you follow that information, you end up getting to this place where you go, oh, there's a correlation between these long-term detrimental health ramifications, pulmonary embolisms, diabetes, heart attack, cancer. All of these things, to an extent in some research, can be pinpointed back to adverse childhood experiences. And so when you understand that data, you can kind of see how your body actually really stores trauma. I know it's a super long answer to your question, but I wanted to create context for people to understand.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the things that I think is important for people to realize is that hypervigilance, it can be context dependent. So for example, one of the ways it showed up for me, Michael, was at nighttime. Like for me, I'd be hypervigilant at nighttime. So if I had anybody in the same room as me, it would be that cortisol flush where I went through 31 years of my life and can't sleep with other people in the room until I met my partner, who's the most amazing person ever and allowed me to help work through it, and with therapy and working through a lot of my own traumas, I was able to kind of get to the point. For me, it was a case of delving in and holding a space for my younger self, holding a space for my adult self, and realizing that there's actually no problem here. It's your nervous system that's overreacted. And again, different people will have different ways to work or get through that. But from your experience, Michael, working with people, people, how would you advise they move on from that fight or flight? Because it's a horrible feeling when it gets triggered. Some people, you know, PTSD is where it's nearly effectively, again, I'm not speaking out of context of my expertise, but it's nearly constant. But people listening to this podcast, it'll be acute or contextual where something will happen and they'll have a trauma response. Some will be aware of it, some won't be aware of it. And what would you advise for those who are trying to move on from that fight or flight? And how would you recommend, or what would you recommend they do to potentially get from zero to one with that cortisol flush or flooded state of cortisol that comes when their nervous system is just completely overreactive or hypervigilant in the case of what you said?
Yeah, man, that's a phenomenal question. And I think honestly, you know, and again, let me be clear. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. This is not medical advice. Don't sue me or Brian. We don't have anything to give you anyway. And so the truth is, man, like, when you think about it and you understand what we just went through, you understand the system, you understand the process, you understand the why. I teach my clients this all the time. If you can figure out how you got to where you are, you can figure out how to get to where you want to go. Now, in the moment, that's a little bit more difficult, right? So now, one of the things that I always recommend that people do is start to take awareness of where they're at, of like thinking about like and being present in their body with what's going on. Because again, one of the very first responses that we have is to dissociate, to remove our brain from the body. Why? Because then we're moved through this place of discomfort and pain. And pain is also like, you think about this, right? When you're a little kid, and depending on what you've gone through, there might be instances where pain, you in your physical body, you actually don't even feel it because you're so removed from your body, right? Mentally, like if you've ever had this episode, and I know many of my clients have, I have, so I'll speak from a first person perspective, where it felt like I was watching what was happening from outside, right? I was like watching myself in this moment. That is classic dissociation. And so how do you get into this place of awareness? I think that's first and foremost. Now, there's a couple practical things, and they're going to be repeated because people listening to this, I'm going to assume, have heard this before, but they're practical because they actually work. And I think the first thing really starts with kind of taking inventory of where you're at. I think the best way to do that is by simply meditating. Now, meditating doesn't even necessarily sitting down trying to get into this Zen Buddhist monk state. I think that's incredibly difficult. Very small percentage of people actually manage to do that. Our brains by nature are always distracted, right? But what you can do is, can you sit and just close your eyes and just focus on your breath and do a what I call body scan meditation. Check in, feel your toes, feel your ankles, feel your knees, feel your thighs, your hips, your torso, your shoulders, your arms, your hands, your fingers, your neck, your head. And what I do in this moment, Brian, this is a part of my daily practice, is I just sit down for a couple of minutes and I just go, I feel my toes, I feel my knees, I feel my hips, so on. Just trying to get my brain and my body connected. Now, there's of course deeper levels of meditation. You can go into breathing meditations, you can go into guided meditations. The reason why I think meditation is so incredibly important in this is because it really helps you create a foundational awareness of where you are in that moment. Because think about this, if you're really dissociated, right, and you're in this place where you're triggered and your adrenaline is coursing through your body, you're injured though, right? That injury you may not pay attention to, you may not notice, because your brain and your body are not connected. Think about this. In a lot of movies that we see, when someone is hurt or freaking out, like screaming or something, somebody will come put their hands on their shoulders and they'll say, breathe, breathe. Because you can go and pinpoint to a lot of the research that shows one of the fastest and most effective ways to get into the parasympathetic nervous system is through breathing. And so if you just breathe, right, that will help you slow down your heart rate, slow down the pump of the adrenaline, and start to get back to this place of center. And that helps you bring to awareness, right? So awareness, I think, is number one. The other part of it, and another way to step into awareness, is simply journaling. Like, take the thoughts, take the ideas, take the things in your head, the shit that keeps you up at night, and put it on a piece of paper. Put it somewhere where it's not in your brain all the time. Free up that space, right? If it's something that you're thinking about all day, every single day, there's probably a reason. And that's because you need to make meaning of it, or you need to solve a problem, or you need to figure out how to navigate into a solution. So take those things. And look, also, it could be journaling in different scope. Man, at one point about 7 years ago, when I was pretty deep into this journey, I had multiple journals on my desk, and each journal had a different color, and each color meant something different. And I had a journal that was red, that was only for anger. And I would just write the most angry shit in my life in that thing, right? Because I just needed to get it out. And people will always go, well, you know, go to therapy. I think therapy is great. It serves a purpose. But there's also the practical side of the work that you do outside of therapy that really becomes the way to start healing this journey, right? To get into what's next. And so on the one hand, it's awareness. On the other, therapy, again, this is just a sense of awareness. And then there's the practical side of actually doing stuff on a daily basis, right? And so you have all these different layers. I think ultimately you have to figure out what's right for you, because it may not be yoga or running like it was for you, Brian. It may be your thing that's a physical activity that brings you awareness into your body every single day is going for a walk with no headphones on in the park. Like, can you just get to this place where you're not distracted, where you're willing to face the discomfort of being within yourself? Because then that's going to help you better understand who you are.
That's such great advice. And something else I was told, for those who are listening, journaling, a very simple technique, but I was always afraid, and again, we'll come back to external validation for sure, and being too worried about the opinions of others, but some of the shit I would write, Michael, I would be terrified anyone else would read. So a piece of advice I was given was just burn it after. Like, and that, weirdly enough, because I very rarely go back over my journal reads and check it out. Sometimes I'll do it, but rarely. That if I'd wrote something that was really in my own head, I don't want anybody else to see this, you can burn it afterwards. And even the art or the physical process of writing it and getting it out of your head can be really cathartic for a lot of people and make you feel better. So that's just something I want to add there. I know what you said there is the opposite end, which works great. Have the different journals that you might use based on the emotion, which I think is a brilliant advice as well. And then potentially on the other end of the spectrum for those who need it, if you need to burn it up, burn it up. There's something to just getting clear on those thoughts that can help. Micah, from your experience, and I'm really curious, as somebody that I would say is probably in the middle of this journey, aware that it probably never ends, but I know you did a podcast on this, so I will ask, does the trauma ever go away?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, man. I think that the way I feel about this, and I don't know that everyone always agrees, but I don't think it does. But I do believe that the impact of it does. And so let me clarify what that means. We're the sum total of all of our experiences, right? That means everything that's ever happened in our life leading up to this moment is a part of who we are. And it would be dismissive to pretend that those things don't impact us. And I think that's a big part of the problem with the conversation about the dark things that we go through in our youth, is because we become adults and people say, man, you're like 27, 34, 52 years old. Can't you get over it? And I'm like, well, that's a part of my human experience. And I think the impact, right? Because especially in the context of this conversation with the tools that we're laying out, the impact can be removed. The impact can be dissipated. You can get to this place where you're not always hypervigilant, where things don't trigger you like you used to, where you're living up to your expectations and your dreams, where you're in this position where you're living life on your terms, where you're free, where you have peace of all those things. But sometimes you're still going to get triggered. You're still going to have that moment. You'll walk past that street. You'll remember that thing. You'll have that scent come in your nose and you'll be like, oh shit, transported. But you'll have the tools to deal with it. And that's what I think is important, right? Knowing and understanding and being aware of yourself and having the tools in place to help you manage and navigate when these things happen. Because I don't know that it ever goes away. Like that moment, that experience, the thought, right? There's so many great modalities in psychotherapy to help with that, from CBT to NLP and so on. But the thing that's really special and I think wonderful about the human experience is we can evolve, we can heal, we can grow. And I say it all the time, though trauma may be our foundation, it's not our future. And I mean that. That doesn't mean that you're removed from those experiences. They don't go away, but the impact can.
I love that. That's, again, so profound, I think. And I, as somebody that working through the middle of it myself, I can definitely attest to it, that the awareness is the first key. You said it earlier, like there was times, if we keep the example that I said about, you know, at nighttime, there was times when I used to have just freak out and not realize why. I wouldn't even realize I was doing it. And then at some point you reflect, I started to journal and realize that, okay, there's a common denominator here. I'm like, this is me. I'm the common denominator, common trigger and common product in all of these experiences. What's going on within me? And then once we did that, and once I was able to work through that with different books, different therapists, different people, different friends, different conversations, different journals, you can definitely get to the sting of it and remove some of that impact, like you said. So I love that advice. I want to kind of funnel it back, Michael, because the content that I've consumed most of yours is definitely through the podcast. And you did also talk about toxic parents in there. And I mentioned earlier, like, my mom's always been my biggest fan. Like, literally, as I said, you know, I had my own issues as a teenager, those blinding headaches, migraines, that, you know, I missed school for a year. I was bullied because of it. And I fucking hated everything. And I would climb up to what was a mountain near my house, and I would just think about, well, what would be the best way to kill myself? And the only reason I didn't was, fuck, what would happen to my mom? I was like, my mom wouldn't get over that. And that was my anchor. Yeah. It was my why. It's the thing I still come back to. And I tell people, because I've talked to people, and you have more experience than me with this, who are going through a shit time and are thinking about taking their life, and I'm like, just push through. I'm like, find an anchor somewhere. I'm like, there's something out there that'll hold you. You know, you might not be fortunate enough to have a mother like I had. You might not be fortunate to have even a person, but there's something that's out there. Even if it's a case like what you did, Michael, where your mess becomes your message, and now you're helping hundreds and thousands of people by promoting or sharing your message, that shows people that they're not alone. Because I think definitely for me, when you're working through traumatic experiences, you think you're the only one. And I think that's why, you know, the groups and conversations like this, it makes people realize, oh, there's other people who have been through this. You know, I'm not the only one. It feels very isolating in the beginning. And some people have toxic parents. Some people have very supportive parents. You know, I know yours on the far side. I know your dad left, I think, before you were two or before you were four. You know, we've talked about your mom. So you're on the far end of toxic parents. I was thankfully on the other side. I have a great relationship with my mother. I have a great relationship with my father now. And so I'm in that kind of other side. But for people who are struggling with toxic parents or some form of toxicity, that they don't feel like they can go to them, they don't feel like they're a safety net, they don't feel like they were there for them through their childhood or teenage years or whenever it is they felt like they needed them, what would you advise people do if they have that kind of relationship with their parents? Because I think that's very applicable to a lot of people listening.
Yeah, it is. And the hard part about that is that ultimately you have to make the right decision and the right choice for you. And I think that one of the more difficult things that we have to do in relation and in regard to our parents is to ask ourselves, like, is my relationship with them actually detrimental? Is it in my way? Is it hurting me? You know, we as human beings, like, we tend to latch on to the singular moments of good amongst the chaos, and we go, well, it's my mom, well, it's my dad, well, it's my brother. And I think to myself often, yeah, but they might be the people that are in your way. And that's a really, really hard reckoning to come to. You know, for me, when I was young, when I was 14 years old, I put a restraining order on my mother and my stepfather. And I said, you guys got to stay away from me. I went to the courthouse with my grandmother, and I got a restraining order put on them. Because I could see the path, man. I was just trying to protect myself. And I was a kid. And at 18, I told my mother I would never talk to her again. You know, the drugs, the violence, the drinking and driving, the lies, all of the things, right? I think you can only forgive somebody so many times. It's like this, man. You know, you walk into a house, and every single time you walk into that house, you get punched in the face. But you're the one choosing to walk into the house. How many times are you going to walk in before you stop, right? And that's what I think about when it comes to being in relation with people who hurt you. And look, for some of those people, again, like my mother, like my stepfather, my grandmother, that was generational, right? Their parents treat them like that, and their parents treat them like that, all the way till you go back to slave trading, right? And even before that, I'm Irish and West African Nigerian. I'm biracial, right? I carry generational trauma that's systemic in my DNA. So do they, right? There's some research that shows we carry 7 generations of DNA from our forefathers in us. So of course that pain and that suffering comes with you. But in real time, in today, in this moment, right? You have people who their parents are destroying their dreams, their livelihood. They're leeching from them. They're taking everything from them. For some of those people, their parents are very narcissistic. Some of their they may be bipolar. They may have mental health ailments. But you have to think about this. Nobody lives for you. Nobody breathes for you. Nobody acts for you. Nobody loves for you. The things that happen in your life, they happen because of the choices and the decisions that you make. And if you're allowing people to be in your life who are taking from you at every turn, who abuse you, who hurt you, and the thing that you go to is, well, it's my mom, right? You have to understand that the nomenclature societally around the world is parents over everything, family over everything. But Brian, I don't agree with that, man. I think that you have to take care of yourself first. And that can be selfish and that can be scary for people. But the truth is, and I mean this, and you really need to think about this. The reason you are not successful in your life right now is probably the people around you, right? And it's a hard reality. The hardest thing, I will never, ever say anything but this. The hardest decision in my life, the most difficult thing I've ever done, is at 18 years old telling my mother, I'll never talk to you again. But I promise you this, my friend, if I wouldn't have made that decision, I would not be talking to you right now.
Such a powerful decision that at that age, but I think it's so relative because based on the life you had led up to that point, you know, you've got several lives in one. Like the further back I go into your story, Michael, like I realize that you feels like you've lived several lives. And I think that's why your advice sticks and lands so much. With that in mind, so something I did want to touch on with you is I think it was in one of your podcasts. I can't remember which one it was. It was a recent episode. I think it might have been the one about understanding the past, but you spoke about external validation in there. And I think this is something a lot of people struggle with, and it gives a nice little jumping off point from parents, because I think sometimes it can stem from that, the validation from your mom, your dad, family members, friends, family, wherever it's coming from. How did you overcome that constant seeking of external validation? This is something I've struggled with as well, and I'm a lot better now, definitely not out the other side completely, but considerably better than where I was. How did you go about fixing that? Because I know when I chat and listen to your podcast, when I'm reading through your book, you're talking about seeking validation from drugs, booze, women, etc. How did you get to the point where you don't and no longer seek that external validation?
Yeah, it's a great question, man. You know, it really comes from this place where you've got to be incredibly comfortable being by yourself. You've got to learn to be okay with not trying to bend who you are so that other people validate you. And that is hard. And in my experience, you know, growing up, my favorite music would have been your favorite music. My favorite food is your favorite food. Like whatever it was, however it is that I needed to fit in, I would do that. But think about this. From a baseline perspective, we are a communal species. To get ostracized, to get kicked out of the community, that means death, right? Public shame, public embarrassment. Now that's more frequent now than death. Like getting kicked out of your friends group isn't going to get you eaten by a bear, right? But, you know, again, 10,000 years ago, it would. And that still carries, right? We're still human beings. We have human DNA. And so I was in this position where I go and I rewind all these moments, right? Being like really bending myself to the will of others for validation, to be seen, to be heard, to be felt, to be appreciated, and losing myself in that and not understanding who I was. And what happened about 10 years ago, I realized something really, really important in my life, that I had no confidence. I had no self-esteem. I had no belief in myself, because I'd only ever been trying to get it from other people, from my mother, from my stepfather, from my friends, from my coworkers. I mean, dude, I'm an introvert. Like by nature, I love to be by myself. But every Friday and Saturday night for about 6 years, you could find me at the bar and the pub, right? And that was a part of my experience of fitting in until I realized that I didn't have to. And what happened in that is I started to change and I started to move towards the person is that I wanted to be, because I wanted to be that person. And it was fascinating to watch the fall off happen. Friends stopped being friends. People stopped calling me. People stopped asking me to hang out because I didn't want to go to the bar and get drunk. I didn't want to go to the concert I didn't want to go to. And one of the most powerful things anyone will ever understand is that other people's opinions of you have nothing to do with you. Let me say that again, because I really want people to understand this. Other people's opinions of you have nothing to do with you. And when you understand that, and when you carry that knowledge with you, you stop caring what other people think. Dude, that is my fucking superpower. Brian, if you don't like me, I don't care. I don't care. I'm just going to keep doing me. I'm going to spread my message. I'm going to wear the clothes I want, talk how I want to talk, act how I want to act. I don't care what you think about me, right? And that's the secret power. You want freedom in life? You want to be you? Then fucking be you. It's that simple, but you got to be willing to step into the discomfort of all the things that come along with that, because people are going to judge you. But guess what? They already are. People are going to make fun of you. But guess what? They already are. People are not going to like you. But guess what? They already don't. Right? And yet we hold on so tightly to the hope that we can get people to bend and be like, yeah, if I act a little bit more like you or do this thing that I don't want to do that's outside of my moral value and character, somehow I'll fit in more. I'll feel better about myself. The greatest thing that you could ever do in your life is to only do the things that you want to do because you want to do them, and never do the things that you don't want to do because you don't want to do them. And that's ownership. That's taking control of your life. And that is ultimately living life on your terms. Is there going to be collateral damage in that? Yeah, of course there is, right? You can't grow without something changing, right? You're going to have to give something up. You're going to have to give up the late night parties you don't want to go to. You're going to give up dating people who aren't on your level. You're going to have to give up all the things about the person you don't want to be. And then you're going to have to be incredibly patient, because it's going to take a while for you to settle into this new skin, right? There's an assimilation process. There's an adaption process. And in that, one day, eventually, on a long enough timeline, I don't know what that looks like for you, you're going to go look in the mirror and you're going to be okay with the reflection on the other side, because you know that you're living life how you want to live it.
Yeah, you're passing that mirror test. I think that's a test I failed for a long time, where you looked in the mirror and you weren't happy with the reflection, either internally or externally. Some people are dealing with issues with their body confidence. Others are dealing with their own internal mental health traumas, or childhood traumas in this case. And when you get to that point where you can look in the mirror and you're happy with what you see and who you are and where you're, you know, where you're going with your life and who's around you, I think there's such an internal satisfaction that comes with that. And I'll add to what you said there, Michael, like, for me, and happiness means, it's a very subjective term, and I never want to go down that rabbit hole with people because it means different things to different people. But to build on your point, for me, it's always been to be able to do what I want with whom I want. And a line that my mum used to always give me was, you know, you're better to have 4 quarters than 100 pennies, to keep with the American dollars, in terms of when I was going out partying and I had loads of friends, or drinking buddies would probably be more accurate of a description. But I didn't have any close friends, and you feel you're walking around feeling a bit lost, because the people around you do influence who you are, as you mentioned. And cutting those people, in the case of your mother and the case of other people, it's so important to realize that you have to take ownership of that and take control of it. And it's not comfortable, as Michael said, but you have to do it in order to facilitate change in your life. Michael, with that superpower of just, I know how to stop giving a fuck is a line you'll use a lot. How long did it take you to develop that?
I mean, shit, man, I'm still developing it, right? Because I think that you're always in this level of growth. Like, because here's why. And I agree with you. I don't know about this concept of happiness. I don't know what that means. Like, what? I don't even know what the measurement for that is. And sometimes that feels super nonsensical to me. So I'm always just trying to be different, right? Can I be different than I was yesterday? Just one degree different, that moves me towards my goal, that moves me towards the life I want to have, that helps me become the person that I know I'm capable of being. And I think that it's just like everything. It's an evolution, and it takes time. And today I feel a certain way, and tomorrow I'll feel a different way. And I just keep stepping into that all the time, because as my ideas and my, here's the thing, dude, this is where I think people get caught up in. I think that this is happening in real time. I'm making meaning of this with you. I think people get caught up in this idea that it's not okay to change their mind once they've made up their mind about something. And I think that's crippling. And I think that's where people get stuck, because they're suddenly in this place where, like, oh yeah, I've been doing all this work. I'm different. I'm showing up in the way that I wanted to be. I found this new community. Oh shit, wait a second. This isn't actually what I wanted. Not that it wasn't beneficial, not that it wasn't a great season of my life, but actually when I look at this from an objective standpoint, this isn't actually really what I want, need, desire. And then you get trapped in that. And then suddenly you're pandering again, right? It's this weird, interesting cycle that happens. And I think that happens because people are terrified to change their mind. And so being okay with changing your mind, which is a part of the evolution, is ultimately, I think, the way that you really hold on to this reality that you can be you. So I think that it's, for me, it's always going to be an evolution. And for other people, you may get to this place where you find out who you are much quicker and you're good with that. But ultimately, either way, I do think the goal is just simply getting that place where you're living life on your terms and looking in the mirror and being okay with the reflection on the other side.
That's fantastic. I love that. It reminds me of the Darwinian quote of, you know, always be trying to get rid of your best loved ideas. I think I'm attributing that to the correct person. And I think belief systems, the things that you've said, confirmation bias is a real thing, that when you've said something, I think me and you, Michael, or you and I can definitely be fall victim to this because of things like the podcast and books, where you've said something out loud on a podcast or in a book, you've written it or in an Instagram post, and you feel like you have to stand by what you've said. And I think when you're able to remove some of that external validation and realize that actually there's more evidence now, I've changed my opinion on that, you know, and we've all been there where you've said something in the past and now you have more experience, you've, you know, read something different, you've thought on it more, you've reflected on it more, and now you actually have a different opinion on it. I think it's really important, because otherwise you get stuck in this kind of closed off mindset. And, you know, I again, to bring it full circle before we finish up with our last question, like therapy, inner work, trauma, all of those things where, Michael, I would have told you to go fuck yourself if someone said to look into that several years ago. I'd be like, you can fuck right off. I was like, I ain't doing that. And it's been the biggest, and, you know, not you personally, it's just that anybody that would bring it up to me, because my mind was closed off to that. And once I was able to open it up and realize that actually there's something here, dip your toe in the water, you know, listen to a couple of your podcasts, read a book on the topic, you know, Think Unbroken or The Body Keeps the Score, or something along those lines, that just opens up your mindset. It can be the thing that just shifts you towards healing and dealing with those traumas, the things that are holding you back, whether it's physically or mentally, your own mindset holding you back from the things you want to do, or your body, your gut, those migraines, you know, all these things that can potentially store in the body. Just getting educated around it can be really helpful. So I want to thank you, Michael, for your message, for on here, and for all the content you put out between the podcast and Instagram and the book. It's so helpful for people. And I just have one final question. Michael, you put out a good bit of content on Instagram. I know the podcast is a big one for you. There's stuff to the website with the blog. But if you could put up an Instagram post that would get out and reach everybody on Instagram who has an issue with trauma and is trying to heal from trauma, what would you write in that post?
Yeah, it's really simple, man. I've actually written it, and it's this. Healing trauma is like picking up trash from your front yard. It's not your trash, but it is your front yard.
That's such a great line. I love that. I saw that. That was a recent post. I saw that at the end of October. I think you posted that because I saved it. It's in my saved on Instagram. It's such a great line. Michael, I can't thank you enough for all you do. I think that's a wonderful way to end this podcast. You know, healing trauma is like cleaning up other people's trash from your own front yard. Such a great line. I'm going to put that as one of my brain tattoos for sure. For people listening, Michael, I will link everything in the show notes. Definitely check out the podcast. Everybody listening here, I highly recommend checking that out to just get some of those light bulb moments and, you know, some triggers. You know, I've listened to a few episodes, and I told you right before we recorded, I've had a couple of my own triggers with some of the things you've said in a good way, things I need to reflect on, things that have helped me when I've been doing journaling, and things I'm going to continue to continually do in the future. But for anyone listening, Michael, where is the best place this? Do you want to send them? Do you want to put them to Instagram? Is it to the podcast? Is it to the blog on the website? And anybody that wants to potentially work with you in an online capacity, any of those links you want to give, please do that now.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can actually get a free copy of Think Unbroken. I give them away, and you can just go to book.thinkunbroken.com. Or just check out the Think Unbroken podcast. I tell people all the time, you listen to that podcast, it'll change your life. It's just Think Unbroken podcast. So yeah, it's my pleasure. It's my honor. Thank you for letting me be here with you today, my friend.
Pleasure was all mine. And for everybody listening, I will link up everything Michael said, everything we talked about in today's podcast on the show notes on BrianKeenFitness.com and in the description wherever you're listening to podcasts. So click on through, give the Instagram page a follow, give the podcast a subscribe or follow, and go check out the blog post as well and the book. Definitely go check that out. Amazing, amazing content to get for free that can potentially change your life if it's something that you need and some of those moments or some of those chapters or sections that jump out at you. Michael, thank you so much again for all you do, and thank you even more for your time today.
My pleasure, my friend.
Whew, I have to decompress after that one. Michael Unbroken on healing from trauma, how to stop seeking external validation and developing self-love the right way. Absolutely love this podcast. This is one of those that I'm very grateful I got to have this conversation. A lot of reflection. Michael's content, particularly his podcast, makes me think about things that I either I'm choosing to ignore or would rather not deal with. And I'm very grateful that he puts out that content, and this conversation was no different. So I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to let me know what you thought. One of the things me and Michael are thinking about doing, or Michael and I are thinking about doing, is just having one of those press record 2-hour conversations that I'll put up as a bonus. That's just free flow. We don't have any topics. We just have a conversation about how things have gone and bounce back and forth and put it up outside of the normal podcast series. So if that's something you're interested in, be sure to let me know as well. Hit me up on Instagram. You can tag me. You can take a screenshot, tag me, Brian_Keen_fitness and Michael Unbroken on Instagram as well. Let me know what you thought. That's everything from this week. Whew, I'm going to go decompress. Enjoy, and I'll catch you all next Monday.